And the air.
Yep.
The subcommittee will come to order. This is a subcommittee on forestry of the Environment and Natural Resource Committee. It's March 6th at 6:05 p.m. The committee has before it Senate File 2976, and the chair recognizes Senator Saxon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Senate File 2976 is a request from the Department of Natural Resources relating to forest road recording. With me today is Bob Tomlinson of the DNR Forestry Division to briefly go over the bill and help answer any questions.
Mr. Tomlinson, welcome to the subcommittee, and lead us through this bill, please.
Thank you. Bob Tomlinson, DNR Forestry. Thank you. Background information, you'll recall that in 2005, passed the original legislation over here, which called for the laid out the process, if you will, that we would go through as a state in officially recording these state forest roads on a county-by-county basis. It affects about 28 counties in mostly in the northern part of the state. And at this point in time, we've completed Hubbard County. We have have completed Lake Cook and Crow Wing and Pine counties all by April. And then after that, we'll be moving into Itasca and Cooch and others as time comes up. This bill, it was identified as we kind of got into this process over the last 9 months to a year thereabouts, that we needed to do a little tweaking on the bill, the original bill that was passed back in 2005. There were some problems. One of the things in Section 1 of the bill, Subdivision 1, just basically kind of tightens up the definition, if you will, of the state forest road. By the commissioner. It has to be adopted by the commissioner, in other words. They added that language in there. And then when we get into Subdivision 2, we're dealing with the map requirements. When we originally put the bill together a few years back, it called for this be prepared on at least 4 inches scale to a mile. And that was okay for the townships, which we had kind of followed. But when we tried to put that many maps up for a county, it got to be a little bit unwieldy. So what we basically have done is come up with them where we just work with the counties to come up with a standard. It might be different from one county to the next, but standard that would be compliant with the county recorders out there in their particular county. Then if you move on to the next page of the bill, there's a number of things in a Subdivision 3 which relate to the procedure to adopt the map. And you can see what we're doing there is changing the word recorded to adopted in a number of places and taking out the word recorded that we thought made it more practical to follow in our efforts in managing this process. And then when we go down to Subdivision 4, we felt there was some problems with the way things were kind of falling into place relative to appeal or not appeal, and so we put together some new language to replace what was there that we think makes it a bit more gives a bit more clarity, if you will, to the process for appeal for the landowners, anybody who might want to appeal, and makes for a transparent process in going through this with the landlords. So those are basically the components of the bill.
Mr. Tomlinson, I have a couple questions. First, on the first page, Section 1, the phrase compliant with county recorder standards, might they vary from county to county?
Mr. Chair, they might.
Okay.
And that was kind of the idea that, as we talked about it with the counties, was that they might use different standards, but provided that they're the ones that have to file these, so we thought it would make some sense to have our standard be compliant with whatever it is that they record out there at the county.
And there's no standardization between the counties on this?
I'm not prepared to say that there isn't any standardization on it. I don't know the answer to that question. I don't think they're all operating on the same standard. There might be several of them that are.
And Ms. Thompson, perhaps I'm reading this too closely, but my concern was that there might be an adopted county recorder standards, and there might be a couple counties who have not adopted those standards and don't want to do something different. And this just says compliant with county recorder standards.
Could they have the county?
Mr. Knopf?
Oh, Mr. Chairman, you could just say compliant with county recorded standards of the county to make sure that if there's variation that it is of that county.
Mr. Thomas, is that? Okay, Senator Saxhog has moved on line, page 1, line 14, after standards, insert of the county. Discussion on that motion? Hearing no discussion, we'll proceed to vote. All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries and the amendment's adopted. And Mr. Thomas, and the other, a small point perhaps. On page 3, lines 9 and 10, the appeal goes to the district court. Is that a standard way for this to be appealed? I know in some cases there's a direct appeal to the appeals court rather than the district court.
Mr. Chair, members, my understanding is that this would be the standard process that they would go through once they've formally filed an appeal with the commissioner, and the commissioner has reviewed it. So this is kind of be that second step in it, is the way I read that, the way I understand it. That's the process to go to the district court next, first.
Is that a standard? That's standard for the district court?
Usually agency decisions go to the Court of Appeals.
Mr. Thomason, I'm familiar with two or three other appeal processes where the end appeal is an expedited appeal to the State Court of Appeals. I don't know if you want to leave it this way and have a little more discussion with people.
Mr. Chair, why don't we do that? This is going to be up next week in the full committee, and I'll talk about this with our folks back in the office and be prepared to respond to that in the full policy committee on Monday.
Okay. And Ms. Thompson,
it's okay.
I'm carrying a bill for administrative procedure orders where there's an appeal process, and the end appeal is an expedited appeal to the appeals court.
Okay.
Mr. Jim Jazz has been working with me on that. Okay. Any other discussion on Mr. Knopf?
Mr. Chairman, just a little technical, the way now subdivision 1 works on page 1. It seems kind of circular now because now you've defined a state forest roadmap as one that's been adopted by the commissioner, and then you say that the commissioner may adopt a state forest roadmap which is defined by one that's already adopted by the commissioner. I'm a little concerned that you've got a circular piece there now that would just could cause some problems in interpretation. I'm sure you'll do the right thing, but I was wondering if you wanted to delete state on strike state on line 1.7, say that the commissioner may adopt a forest roadmap under this section, and for the purposes, a state forest roadmap means one that's been adopted, so that you make sure you're not, because otherwise if you fit that definition, it says that the commissioner can only adopt a roadmap where he's already adopted one. It's kind of a technical issue, but I think that,
Mr. Chair, we're interested in improving the bill if you feel that that's one that would help. We wanted to make the case, be clear that in order for a forest road to be official, it has to be adopted by the commissioner. Then there is also the state forest road map that has to be adopted. So, okay. Each forest road independently of one another have to be officially designated by the commissioner. Actually, I think is the right term.
Mr. Knopf?
And Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to make sure that when somebody applied that definition to the, because when you use the word on 1.7, 1.8, state forest road map, it is now going to be defined as the one that's already been adopted by the commissioner. And I think if you just would strike state on line 1.7, that it kind of gets you out of that, because forest roadmap is not a defined term. So basically, you can adopt a forest roadmap, and it does say to record the department state forest road prescriptive easement. So it's clear which ones are being adopted. And that way you don't get cause a problem with using a defined term to define itself.
Senator Saxall, would you like to move that?
I will move the amendment and changes as outlined by Mr. Knopf. Yes.
Yeah. Senator Saxhog has moved on page 1, line 7, delete the word state.
Strike
the word state. Right. Discussion on that motion to amend. Hearing none, we'll proceed to vote. All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? The motion carries and the amendment is adopted.
Senator Saxhog. Mr. Knopf, so is there other instances here where the word state is that we should be striking it to?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Secretary, no, I don't think so. I think
okay.
My only concern was where you give the commissioner the authority to adopt these, that it not be determined, you know, because every place else you use, it's going to be the adopted map. It is going to be after adoption. But this is the basic authority to adopt the map.
Okay. Well, Mr. Chair, if there are no further questions, I would move that Senate File 2976 be, as amended, be recommended to pass and sent to the Environment and Natural Resources Policy Committee.
Members, further discussion on that motion? Hearing no further discussion, we'll vote on Senator Saxhog's motion to refer this to the full committee, recommend it to pass. All in favor of that motion indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion carries, and the bill is sent to the full committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If it's okay to proceed.
Yeah. Senator Saxhog, absolutely. The committee has before it now Senate File 2651.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Senate File 2651, and this, is, by the way, is the way it's come out of Senator Scogin's Public Lands and Water Subcommittee. What we have before is a piece of legislation that is a result of some forest land consolidation working group work that I chaired in the recent interim, and it's been under Senator Anderson's budget division. This bill is the first step to trying to get a handle on what I feel is the greatest threat to our forests in this state, and that's fragmentation, and the best way to enhance forest management, which is consolidation. So this bill has several parts and several sections that I would ask testifiers to come up and help me with. The first one will be Minnesota Forests of the Future, which are sections 1 and 2, Mr. Bass, I think you're going to help me out here.
Mr. Vadas, welcome to the subcommittee. And state your name for our record, please, and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Marty Vadas, and I'm the Director of the Lands and Minerals Division of DNR. And this portion of the bill is a result of an advisory committee that Commissioner of Natural Resources formed last July, and the purpose was to review the past forest conservation easement activities in Minnesota and make recommendations for a program that hopefully would be established in state law. And so really this portion of the bill is the result of that. And I could either answer questions, Mr. Chair, or quickly walk through this, whatever you'd prefer.
Mr. Vadas, I think it would be helpful if you just quickly walk through this portion.
Mr. Chair, the purpose is stated to work on these private lands, and really the goal is the working forest aspect. But along with that comes other natural resource benefits that are outlined in the purpose statement. And there's a definition section that talks about that specifically, especially the working forest land portion. And this does then establish a program and sets up some criteria that the commissioner would use in selecting lands, and also defines what lands would be eligible for this program in Subdivision 4. And it then goes on in 5 to talk about the fact that conservation easements or easement acquisitions is one tool the commissioner could use, but along with that it could be fee title and it could be by gift or donation as well. And the commissioner would accept applications from landowners that would be interested in participating in this program. It establishes what the responsibilities of the landowner would be in Subdivision 7. And it talks about it would be conveying to the state a permanent easement right And there would be an advisory team that would be established that would help the commissioner work through evaluating which lands would best serve the state's interest to acquire for this purpose. Subdivision 8 or 9 and 10 set up a mechanism to correct easement or boundary line issues that come up in the future. And also, should the commissioner determine it's in the state's best interest, that a portion of the lease could be terminated in the future. The payments would be made under Subdivision 11 according to all of the rest of statutes that apply to DNR when land is acquired. And finally, it was established there'd be a monitoring program, long-term monitoring of these easements, and set up conditions should there be violations of the easement standards, that there could be enforcement actions taken and damages that could be put against the violators of the easement conditions. Mr. Chair, if there are any questions, I'd be happy to try to help.
Mr. Vadas, I just have one, and that goes to the point of a landowner who may violate the terms of an easement. What type of oversight will the department be giving these easements as they go into the future? How often will somebody from the department look to see that the landowner is abiding with the easements?
Mr. Chairman, that would be part of the program that would be established, is that there would be a long-term monitoring program to determine that there is compliance with the easement standards. And it would be periodic, and how often is periodic? Likely it would be on an annual basis that these lands would be evaluated to ensure compliance. DNR just participated in a 51,000-acre forest conservation easement in Kuchiching in Itasca County, and don't want to lead to believe that that would mean that someone would go visit every one of those 40s, but there would be a program in place to monitor weather, air photos, that sort of thing, see what kind of activity is going on in the land, conversations with the landowner to try to understand what activities they've taken place in the last year. And so the details of exactly what that monitoring program would look like would be part of what, should this law pass, that we would establish the operational aspect of it.
Mr. Vadas, I think it's important that there be some oversight. I don't know if it has to be every year, but at least so the landowners know that the department and the state is watching, so that 25 years from now, the purpose for the permanent easement has been subverted, and the money, the taxpayer money the state paid for that easement is has not been fulfilled.
Mr. Chairman, absolutely, that would be one of the criteria and the goals of this program.
Okay, thank you. Questions on this section of the bill for Senator Saxhauger, Mr. Vadas? I don't see any hands going up, so Senator Saxhauger, continue.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We're on Section 2 now, which is the Forest for Future Evolving Account. So you don't... I think that Mr. Knopf, you're familiar with.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Saxhauger, I am.
Okay, so if you're more comfortable with that, Mr. Is sir, Mr. Chair, certain portions of this bill, I think that Mr. Knopf will be the most skilled, but we're going to skip Section 2 for a minute and go to Section 3, and I'm going to ask Kathy Lewis from the department to lead us through that particular, and it involves expedited land exchanges.
Ms. Lewis, welcome to the subcommittee.
Thank
you. Proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Kathy Lewis with the Department of Natural Resources Subdivision. Section 3 of the bill is from the DNR. And it also is an outgrowth of the forest fragmentation team that was led by Senator Saxhauger. What this section does is it establishes an expedited process for the exchange of publicly owned lands between the state and governmental subdivisions of the state. In practice, most of the exchanges will be between the DNR and the counties. There's going to be a focus on consolidation of ownership and also a focus on reducing forest fragmentation. The results should be a reduction in cost for doing the exchanges, and there should also be savings of time to do this. In the bill, subdivision 2 of the bill identifies as a class of lands covered by the expedited process. Class 1 is land managed by the DNR except the school and university lands. Class 2 is tax forfeited land, and Class 3 is land owned by other governmental subdivisions. We've excluded the school and university trust lands from the bill at this time. What we want to do is try this new program out, make sure there's sufficient safeguards in place to protect our fiduciary responsibilities. And we find the program works well, we'd come back in a subsequent session and ask to include the trust lands. Subdivision 3 of Section 6 concerns evaluation of the lands. And in addition to the process for appraisals and minimal valuation process in statute, we also allow the use of a real estate broker's analysis. We also have to consider the timber value in the valuation of the lands. We also provide that we have to meet the substantially equal in value test, but we don't require that the lands be exactly equal in value. And we've found that we've used up time monkeying around with getting the exact acreage in exchange for very little difference in value. So that eliminates that requirement. Subdivision 4 allows us to use title insurance. Subdivision 5 recognizes the provision in the Constitution that these exchanges require the unanimous approval of the Land Exchange Board, and that's the governor, auditor, and attorney general. Subdivision 6 is a technical provision of who goes first in issuing deeds back and forth. Subdivision 7 looks at providing a reverter provision for a period of 40 years. We want to make sure that the parties and all sides are serious that they're doing these exchanges for the purposes of managing the lands. If there's some reason that arises, for example, there's some particular public benefit for a particular parcel, you'd have to go back to your exchange party and get permission to be released from that reverter. Otherwise, make sure that the parties stay serious about what they're doing. And Subdivision 8 is just a technical provision recognizing that the land you exchange with takes on the class of land that you have exchanged. That is the provisions of Section 3 of the bill, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, I just make a couple of comments.
Senator Saxon.
Much of what Ms. Lewis has been talking about here came out of the largest land exchange in the history of the state of Minnesota, which just came about the year before last, involving the Minnesota Steel Project. And I think that through that experience and some great work from the DNR and Itasca County, we found that things like title insurance and the idea that, you know, there could be a little cash that could pass hands if you couldn't exactly come up with the equal amount of land. Little things like that really did expedite things when you were working with 7,000 acres and how many parcels?
Ooh.
It was a huge.
It was a lot in charge.
Through that experience, Mr. Chair and members, I think we gained the experience that helped us and is reflected in this bill.
Any questions on Section 3? I don't see any hands going up, Senator Saxog, so continue.
All right. Thank you very much. I think before we get to the portions that Mr. Knopf can help us with, I'm going to ask Dave Zemeta to come up and review Section 11. And that's the fragmentation study. So,
welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Dave Zemeta, Executive Director of the Minnesota Forest Resources Council. Section 11 of the bill relates to a study of forest parcelization and subsequent development. This, I want to point out, there was a $200,000 appropriation for this study in the last legislative session. It was in the governor's recommended budget. It was supported by the Senate and made it through the last part of the conference committee. and we ended up not getting funded. As a result of that, the what the study entails is looking at parcelization of forest lands, the breaking of larger parcels into smaller parcels, what is the relationship of that to development of that forest land, and then subsequent forest fragmentation of the land in terms of habitat and so on. We're proposing to expand a study that we've already funded of these processes in Itasca County to other northern and central Minnesota counties, then to look at a whole array of different tools, policy tools available to the legislature to address forest parcelization, one of which is conservation easements, but there's a whole array of other tools as well that we're interested in evaluating, and then finally making recommendations to the legislature. Because we didn't get this study funded, and there was a lot of interest in getting it funded, the Blandon Foundation approached us and solicited a proposal from us for $100,000 that they've committed to fund. Iron Range Resources, likewise, has committed $50,000. What we're seeking is $50,000 to make the $200,000 we originally requested. The Blandon Foundation's board has required us to get this $50,000 match from the legislature in order for the money to come to us. So that's basically where we are. We have $150,000 on the table if we can get this additional $50,000 to make the study complete. And with that, I'll stop and take any questions.
Mr. Zometa, that's a helpful explanation. Now, this bill will have to go to finance because
Absolutely.
Of this. So I'm sure we'll have further discussion when it gets to the Environment, Natural Resource Division of Finance. Senator Saxog, do you have other?
We do. Thank you, Mr. Zometa. So the remaining sections, Mr. Chair, are sections 2, 4 through 9, and 10. And sections 2 and 10 involve a transfer for Forest for the Future in a revolving account. And on those two sections, Mr. Knopf, could you lead us through those?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman and members. On section 2, what this is envisioned to do is to be some money available to the commissioner to acquire forest lands to apply easements comparable to the Forest for the Future easements that were in the previous section, section 1, and then to resell those lands with the easement attached. And then put the money back into the fund. There's some thought that it may be cheaper for the state, instead of buying the easement, to actually acquire the land, place the easements on, and resell the land, that the state may be able to get more land with easements, subject to easements, through that approach. So this is an attempt to create a fund for the state to try that, to use that approach also. So that's that. And then the Section 10 is basically just a transfer of money. It's an unspecified amount from the general fund. For that purpose, it could be other funds too that could be used for it. But for now, there's a placeholder. Senator Saxog has a general fund transfer into that account. It would be a revolving account allowed. In fact, there's an appropriation of the money to the commissioner to do this. But then he has to report every year to the legislature on the activities in that account. And then, Mr. Chairman, I go on.
I was just going to make a comment, Mr. Chair.
Senator Saxog.
Of course. You're familiar with the revolving fund that is about to come out of the LCCMR, but an example of this might be that if there was a piece of land that was landlocked and there was a lack of access, this revolving fund might be used to purchase a land leading into that landlocked piece of land. The easements could, after the purchase, easements could be put on that land, and then the land, in fact, could be resold with the easements on it. And that would be an example of how you could continue to revolve the fund.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Mr. Knopf?
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And Mr. Chairman, then, if you look on the bottom of page 5, you see the start of section 4, and this is defining the term claimant. And what it would allow is for a person who's now has an auxiliary forest contract to automatically qualify for inclusion. Auxiliary forests are, it's kind of it's an older program. There haven't been any new ones for many years. I was kind of prior to the tree growth tax where forests were put into that program. And then there are still some forests, I think, out there that are in that program and receiving some of the benefits from that. But this allows them to transfer those to this new program, and basically it automatically qualifies if it's in the Forest Incentive Program. And that's, then again, I should have specified that they are basically automatically qualified for the Forest Incentives Act, Sustainable Forest Incentive Act, the SFIA program. That's the program where they, and we'll get into that later, what to receive under that program. And then Section 5 deals with applications. And again, what this is just is a technical provision. You'll see later on that the appeals process is being recodified into a new section. That's why on 7.17 you see that cross-reference change. Section 6 clarifies for the annual certification what the who the claimant is, and changing it to original claimant, because a few years ago, The law was changed to allow for a purchaser to be basically, if the land is purchased by someone else, that they automatically become a claimant under. You can actually see that on page 6, the clause 2, and then now we're going to have clause 3 to make sure that it's the original claimant from when it started in the Sustainable Forest Incentives Act program. And so that's mainly a clarification of that. And then in Section 7, a little more substance, this would increase the minimum payment under the program. You can see there are several ways to calculate what the payment will be, but under current law, the minimum payment is $1.50, and this would increase that minimum payment to $5 per acre as a minimum. Section 8, this is where currently the provisions are related to the appeal are held, and what you can see that it's there's a cross-reference added, and then the appeal process is stricken, and then you'll see in Section 9 the new appeals process. And under the new appeals process, this is recodifying what's there, but it expands on it and provides better timelines and dates for administrative appeal, and then also appeal to the tax court. You can go directly to the tax court, or you can have your appeal after. You can appeal to the Commissioner of Revenue first, and then appeal to the tax court later. You've got 120 days to appeal to the tax court, or 60 days after you've appealed to the commissioner. So those are laid out more directly and clear on how that appeal process works. And then, as I stated, Section 10 is that transfer of money. So I think we're done.
Members, that's an explanation of the bill. Is there a discussion or questions about the bill? Hearing no further discussion, Senator Saxog, what would you like the subcommittee to do with the bill?
Well, Mr. Chair, I'd like to move Senate File 2651 be recommended to pass and sent the Environment and Natural Resources Policy Committee.
Okay, before I take the vote on that, I believe Mr. Knopf has spotted something in Senate File 2976. It would probably be wise if we revisit that after this vote.
Okay,
so
great.
People stay in your chair for another minute or two after this. You heard Senator Saxog's motion that Senate File 2651 be referred back to the full committee, recommended to pass. All those in favor of that motion indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion carries, and the bill is sent with recommendation to the full committee.
Mr. Chair.
You have needs to reconsider. Senator Saxog, would you move to reconsider Senate 2976?
Mr. Chair, I would move to reconsider Senate File 2976.
Senator Saxog has moved that as voting on the prevailing side, that the Senate, that subcommittee now reconsider the vote on Senate File 2976, whereby it was recommended to pass. All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries, and the bill is back before us. Mr. Knopf.
Mr. Chairman, there's a couple of things that I noticed, and actually when Senator Saxog asked me if we needed to make a few other changes later, I thought we didn't, but at further review, it looks like we do need to make a few changes. You were right, Senator Saxog. But first of all, on Senator Fredrickson's suggested amendment on 1.14, I think it would be clearer to also, right now you've got after standards insert of the county, but to also on line 1.14 delete county recorder, and then after the added county, add in or insert recorder where the state forest roads are located. I think it would be very clear, it would read compliant with the standards of the county recorder where the state forest roads are located. I just think that would be a much clearer way of stating that than what was adopted earlier.
Senator Saxog, will you?
I would move that change, Mr. Chair.
Members, you've heard that motion to amend. Discussion. All those in favor of the motion indicate by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? The motion carries and the amendment's adopted.
And then, Mr. Chairman, on page 2, kind of going through this after the vote was taken, I think it would be best on line 2.2 to strike the word state. On 2.15, strike the first state and then delete the new language adopted. And that would be consistent with the amendment you adopted earlier, because on 2.2, you're talking about a public hearing on adopting a state forest roadmap. So it would be a forest roadmap to record roads, because otherwise it's a state forest roadmap refers to ones already adopted. And I think that would be consistent with your earlier decision. And then on 2.15, the same here, because it's adopt the forest roadmap. So you strike state and then you don't really need adopted on line 2.15, the new language, because the state forest roadmap means one that's been adopted.
Okay. I would move those changes.
Senator Saxog has moved the motion to amend as delineated by Mr. Knopf. Discussion? Hearing no discussion, we'll proceed to the vote. All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries and the amendment's adopted.
That's all.
Senator Saxog, that's all the changes.
So, Mr. Chair, I would move that Senate File 2976, as amended or reamended, be approved and sent on to the Environment and Natural Resources Policy Committee.
Senator Saxog has moved that Senate File 2976, as amended, be recommended to pass and referred back to the full committee. Discussion? All those in favor of the motion indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The motion carries, and the bill is sent back to full committee, recommended to pass. Senator Saxog, what else would you like us to do?
Well, we don't have anything right now, Mr. Chair, but I do appreciate you and the members of the committee coming together this evening to get these things done. We have a full selection of committees to go through with these bills, but I think they're going to be very valuable should we get that done.
Senator Saxog, as members of the Forestry Subcommittee, we talk a lot about forests here. We'd like to go up to your district and see these forests sometime.
You know, I think
in the fall.
Mr. Chair, that's a great idea. Well, I mean, much of what we're talking about, you know, is new, but there's always people up there that are interested in this, and Mr. Brandt from the Minnesota forest industry would probably be more than happy to take us on a tour up there.
There being no further business for the subcommittee is adjourned.